Welcoming in JP Donnell today. JP Donnell is a former US Navy SEAL and now a leadership instructor, speaker, and strategic advisor with Echelon Front, where he serves as director of experiential leadership training programs. Sent to the violent terrorist stronghold of Ramadi, Iraq in 2006 with SEAL Team 3's Task Unit Bruiser, JP served as point man, machine gunner, and lead sniper for Delta Platoon opposite the American sniper Chris Kyle, who was in Charlie Platoon. For his leadership and courage under fire, JP was awarded a Silver Star, two Bronze Stars with Valor, and the Army Commendation Medal with Valor, helping his Task Unit Bruiser to become the most highly decorated Special Operations Unit of the Iraq War. He worked closely with SEAL officers Jocko Willink and Leif Babin, and was the driving force on many of the daring combat operations Jocko and Leif wrote about in their book, Extreme Ownership. JP lives at home in Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, with his wife Amanda and three kids. JP Donnell, it's an honor and a privilege to have you on the show, man. You're very welcome here.
Thank you, sir. How are you doing?
Doing really good. JP, I have to say, I'm like super stoked. This is like a child at Christmas because a little bit of backstory to yourself and to the guys listening in, you know, like why it was so personally important for me to invite you on. Extreme Ownership, you know, the two guys that obviously you are so personally connected with, Jocko and Leif. The origins of my work here, working with guys around the planet just to support coming into their power as husbands, you know, three and a half years ago, that's when it was breakdown or breakthrough in my own marriage. It was literally at a time when my wife for several months could have been going out the door. The conversations, the intensity of it, you know, I was in my own inner and outer battlefield. And at that time, I came upon Extreme Ownership. And I just listened to it incessantly. And it just infiltrated my whole nervous system, this whole idea that, you know, taking extreme ownership, I just intuitively knew this is what I need to do to transform my marriage. And I'm here 3 years later. There's been lots of other teachers along the way, but definitely, you know, extreme ownership and I suppose that code of conduct that you guys would have used on the battlefield and in your trainings, that has transformed everything for me. So I'm just super pumped and excited to have you on board and just like to tap into your wisdom, sir.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate the opportunity to just share some stories and, you know, us kind of go back and forth with Q&A, whatever you want. You know, I'm also very thankful for Extreme Ownership because I read Extreme Ownership before I was a part of the team. And actually during that time, my wife and I were actually divorced. You know, we were divorced for about a year, and I read Extreme Ownership and it was liberating. Because I, like you, realized I could actually now start to fix all the problems in my life. When I stopped playing the victim card and decided, you know what? Hey, I caused these problems. And, you know, and there's some things that people get twisted with extreme ownership. They're like, well, how can I take ownership over? And they'll give some extreme example. And it's like, okay, well, yeah, you can't take ownership over what that person did to you or to the environment that you're a part of, but you can take control over your attitude and how you react to it. You can take control over your integrity about doing the right thing in regards to how you respond and what you do moving forward. You can take ownership over your work ethic. You can take ownership over your discipline. And it's like when I started to like remember those things, because I knew those things in the SEAL teams. Like Jocko was my task unit commander. Like dude, I remember these things. I taught these things at TRADA, the training detachment that we all worked for under Jocko. Like I taught these principles in the training that we were doing to prepare these guys for war. And then when I got out, you know, I still applied them. You know, I did very well in on the sales side in this company and this business. And, you know, I got promoted as sales manager and over guys that had degrees in business and banking and finance and master's degrees. And I remember I asked them, I'm like, why'd you guys pick me over everybody? I have a high school diploma, you know, like, why'd you pick me over all these other guys? And they said it was because of how I interacted with the team and the principles that I used and helped drive to the guys. you know, was a thing. It was crazy. I was doing these little free leadership trainings once a week at the company because I realized, I'm like, man, there's a lack of leadership development here, which is common in most corporate America environments. And it's funny. It was like, I wish I could get like the video and pictures from it. It's like, bro, it's like embarrassing when you look back at it, but hey, everyone starts somewhere. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those things where I just remember, like, I felt like, hey, this is something that I should do for the company. And I was teaching some lessons that I had learned in the SEAL teams and from books that I had read. And then I read Extreme Ownership, and it was a complete game changer. And so when I was able to start working on myself and fixing myself, then I could actually start affecting positively the people around me instead of it just all being negative. And then came the opportunity for Amanda and I to, you know, get our marriage back. You know, she called me one morning. I had the girls, it was my weekend with the girls. I was getting them ready for church. And she's talking to the girls while I'm braiding one of my daughter's hair. And she's like, hey, do you want dad to pick me up for church? And of course, what are the girls going to say? Yeah, you know, but yeah, of course. And so I remember I was actually pretty frustrated. And because we had done the back and forth thing so many times, and I didn't want to do it again. And, you know, even though I was mad at her, I still loved her. And, you know, she's a mother of my children. I'll always love her no matter what. Like, I'll always take care of her no matter what. Like, she's the mother of my children. You know, I don't believe in the game of like, when you get a divorce, like, hey, screw that person. I mean, if they did something drastic, maybe, but I still don't believe that because, hey, you chose to have kids with them. Yeah. Like, what good does it do my kids to screw her over? Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, nothing. Yeah. And it does nobody good. And so even when we were divorced, I made sure I took care of her. Like, I did the best that I could financially. And, you know, we actually had good parenting relationship. That's one thing I'd say I always like respect Amanda so high is she never used the kids against me. Mm-hmm. Like, not once. And women in the past have been known to do that against men. And this is not a negative comment against women. Trust me, I'm not bashing women. I just know what I've seen, and women will use kids against their fathers in those times of splits. I'm dealing that with one of my buddies right now from our jujitsu gym. His wife left 6 weeks ago, has not let him talk to or see his kids once.
Oh man.
Like, that's messed up. Like, that's not even close to being acceptable.
Yeah.
But you know what? She can do that. And yeah. Now he's trying to collect all these letters of character from guys from the gym so he can go to court and show the judge, like, hey, like, I just want to see my kids. Like, it's messed up that he even have to do that. So Amanda never played that game. And so while I was, yes, frustrated that she was like, hey, I want to go to, you know, hey, do you want daddy to pick me up for church? Of course, the girls are going to say that. I also still loved her. And I was like, well, that's the mother of my children. So I'm going to try to treat her with respect and try to treat her well, which I don't always do. And I fail, right, as a human, as a male. But, you know, I was at least trying to do the right thing. And so I grab her and we go to church, and it was cool because the pastor was talking about letting go of anger and resentment in your heart. I was like, okay, all right, you're talking to me, Lord, which he always seems to do perfectly. And then there was an opportunity for us to do a small group afterwards. And Amanda's like, hey, we should try one of these small groups. And I'm like, they're for married couples. We're not married. You know, I was just like, get my little dig in. And she goes, no, so we should try one. And I said, okay. I remember I was like, well, if we do this and it doesn't work, then we know we've done everything, you know, like, let's just agree on being friends and move forward and just like, we'll just be best friends. And she was like, okay. And so we signed up for the small group. And I mean, but here's the thing. We also made a commitment, and that's the issue that people have is they'll just talk about doing stuff, but they won't fully make a commitment. And I can tell you that, you know, I read Extreme Ownership, and then I believe Amanda read Extreme Ownership right around that after, like, once we started like working on the marriage, I believe she read Extreme Ownership, but we also made a commitment to like fully go all in with each other and just try to make it work. You know, we couldn't be halfway out. We couldn't do any of that. And we did, and we made that commitment, and we made the commitment to God and to our kids and to each other. And we went all in, and we took ownership over our relationship. We worked on our communication. We worked on making sure we were putting each other above ourselves, making sure that we were making each other priorities and our family priorities, and you know, just implementing the principles that we teach at Echelon Front into our marriage, made a big difference, and it was cool. But the commitment thing is the biggest thing, because I see a lot of people try to make their marriages work, and it's just, man, if you're both not willing to commit, it's not going to work. And it's heartbreaking, because one of my other buddies is dealing with this right now. Him and his wife had split up, and he had been trying to work on things through her. And, you know, he went to this same freedom type ministry that I went to. I went to it last February. He went to it recently in September, right after I was on Ryan Mickler's podcast. And, you know, he was like, all right, I'm going to try to make this work with my wife. And I mean, at the thing, he was like, dude, we're done. And I was like, I don't think so. And, right. And I wrote down in a journal, like, their marriage will be restored. And, and so I told him that, and we were talking about it afterwards. And so he started working on some stuff with her, and things were great. And there's a women-based freedom ministry through that group, and she went through it too, and things were really good. But, you know, I was talking to him today, and I still don't think it's over. I still think there's hope. But he's like, hey man, I think we're going our own ways. And I was like, why? Like, I just couldn't understand it. And then the more we talked, and I wasn't like putting this on him, like, bro, like, why didn't you make this work? I was just curious, like, why? And as we talked, it just, she's not all in. She's not committed to making it work. And it's heartbreaking. Like, it's heartbreaking. But, you know, I'll tell you what, the man is, he's a strong man, because he was like, you know, I know you're not supposed to quit. We're not supposed to quit. Like, guys like us don't quit. We got to keep grinding it out. He goes, but I also know the biggest thing that I can't quit on is helping this ministry. And, you know, this train wreck of a marriage that I don't know will ever be restored is going to take away from the ministry. So I have to shift my focus. And he goes, you know, I have peace. You know, he's like, I haven't had peace yet. And I was like, well, you know where peace comes from. Peace only comes from the Lord. And if you have peace, I'm not saying that he's, you know, I know someone's listening is going to twist up what I'm saying right now, but I just hope, you know, my intent is, you know, as I'm talking to what he's saying is like, hey, if you feel peace, then, you know, you've done everything you could, bro. You've done everything. I mean, he's done everything. He's gone to, you know, men's event. She's gone to a women's event. They went to a couples thing. They're doing couples therapy. He's doing his own therapy. She's doing her own therapy. I mean, you can't say they're not doing the work. Yeah. She's just not committed.
Yeah.
And it just, unfortunately for him, it's in that position. And that's the thing is like, hey, if you're wanting to make a marriage work, there has to be commitment.
Yeah.
Like, there has to be, because it's hard, man. Marriage is not easy. It's not all like sunshine and rainbows and fun all the time.
Well, my reflections, you know, when I read Extreme Ownership, and I remember at the time, you know, for first 12 years in marriage, things, it was sort of train wreck. It was maybe a train wreck, not in an ultra dramatic way. It was a train wreck because it just was fucking mundane. It was quietly degrading in the silence in the background. So it was like the non-dramatic train wreck. But it wasn't lost on me that it was, you know, a leadership protocol or training program from high-end military leadership that brought my marriage around. It's like there was a deep-seated message in that. And I think that's one of the things, like, in the podcast, and I really bring it in as often as possible, is for guys listening in, you know, showing up as a husband, as a dad, as a family man, that's an exceptionally high level of leadership is required. That's like part of the job. And if we don't like that, and I know myself, and like dealing with guys, it's like the more we resent that, the more we resent, you know, to resist that whole idea that we have to show up to that level of leadership to make the thing work. I think it goes back immediately to what you're saying. It's like, it's that level of commitment, not a word that you just put out there, but it's like embodied commitment, the willingness, moment to moment, day to day, conversation to conversation, to take ownership.
Yeah. It's a constant thing that you have to just be aware of. And, you know, when I, you know, was able to recognize that for myself, and Amanda recognized it for herself, you know, things shift and change, you know. And I think the name of your podcast is pretty rad, you know, and because that's the goal. Like, I want my wife to brag about me. I mean, sometimes, excuse me, you know, some of the, you know, issues that have happened in our marriage is because, you know, I didn't feel like she respected me like she should have. And she felt like I didn't respect her like in the way that she should have. And, you know, if you're showing your wife respect and you're putting her above yourself, like a good leader should, you always put the team above yourself. You know, you're the last, you know, it's the mission, the team and individual, and then yourself. Why do we not do that in our marriages? You know, in the Bible, it tells us what we're supposed to do. That's the cool thing about the Bible. It gives us the answers, you know, to life. And, you know, life's not easy. It's not simple. And, you know, just because you read the Bible doesn't mean that it's going to make your life simple and easy, but there are answers in there. And it tells you, you know, for, you know, you leave your mother and father to join as one with your spouse. All right. So now you become a team. And what do you do with the team? You put the team above yourself. So that means that you put your wife above yourself. You put your wife above your kids, and you show your kids what that looks like. And that's a big thing for me. And that's, you know, it's a big thing in our marriage, and is understanding that we have to put each other above ourselves and have alignment. That's the thing, man. If we don't have alignment, your marriage isn't going to work. And the way you get alignment is through communication. You just have to talk through stuff. Things aren't going to be easy. They're not going to be simple. But if you talk and you communicate and you understand that you each have a mutual trust and respect for each other and that you want the same things, then okay, cool. It works out. It's simple.
JP, what I'm curious about, and I know, like, I'm tapping into the podcast that you did with Ryan Mickler. In that, you mentioned that, you know, there was a breakdown of trust. Clearly, at some point, yourself and Amanda chose to split ways. What was necessary from you as a man and as a husband to rebuild and regain that trust to the level that it's at now? What did that process look like?
You mean for me to trust her or for her to trust me?
For her to trust you, I think first and foremost is just what did you have to do in your inner world process as you were learning to relate with Amanda again, to rebuild her trust in you as a man, as a husband, as a leader?
You know, I think it's the actions that we take. You know, I could say I'm going to do all the things I'm going to do, or hey, I'm not going to do this anymore, or hey, you know, we should do this. But if you're not actually doing it, then your words are useless, right? And so if I can't build, you know, and that also comes down to us actually having a good relationship, which comes from communication. Like if we have a good relationship and we're talking, we're communicating, and we're finding alignment, there's trust, you know, because we have that good relationship, there's trust. And with trust comes influence. We can actually influence each other in our marriage if we trust each other. And the trust came from the relationship part of it. And think about it. When you're building a relationship, what do? You talk with somebody, you ask them questions, you do what you say you're going to do. You don't lie to them. You're doing everything you can to build up trust. It's the same thing when you're rebuilding it. Just understand that when you are rebuilding trust, it's going to take a little bit longer because they're not going to believe you initially. And they're going to say, okay, well, is this just, you know, are they just saying this? Is this like just another, you know, just act, that game that they're playing? So it's things that you have to be aware of. And so there takes time, it takes patience. And one of the things that I had to remind myself is, you know, just because like I'm forgiving her and I'm in a good place doesn't mean that she's in that same spot. Because I know I'm quick to forgive. I'm really quick to forgive. I'm not saying that she's not, but men and women are different, and Amanda and I are different. And, you know, just because I was quick to forgive, and in my mind, I'm like, hey, we're good. We should be good. No, you have to give that time. It needs to develop into, you know, into something that they actually like, oh, okay, he's being consistent with doing these things. He's being consistent with not doing these things anymore. And that's a big thing. You have to show people and do what you say you're going to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I found out myself for years, that sacred thing of trust. It was probably the one thing, like where Matilda with me was looking for intimacy, was looking for emotionality, was looking for emotional attunement. It was like the feminine needs. And I had no fucking idea what that was about. What the golden thread for me as a man was, what my core need that I was saying is like, just trust me. Just like, why won't you trust me? But yeah. But it's like, and I look back now and like, well, I do. I honor the guy that was, you know, was in my less awake state. It was like, I thought, you know, asking for it, you know, like, this is a need, trust me, you know, like that words were enough, you know, she should have just done that or given it. But it's that level of humility. I know you speak about that, the foundation of being humble enough to show up, and that yeah. trust is only earned in the arena, moment to moment, like in demonstrated commitment. It's not words. It never is words.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's, I like how you said, well, just trust me. It's like, we're so guilty of that. I mean, so guilty. And here's the other thing that most men are guilty of is like, okay, well, now all of a sudden, let's just say, you know, yeah, we've been fighting, we've been arguing, have some hard times, and then we're intimate. And then what's in the guys' minds? Oh, we're good. Hey, we had sex. Everything must be fine. And then we go back to just, hey, everything's fine. And we don't address the actual problem. We don't talk about it. We don't work through it. And then we just keep doing these cycles. And I know that's something Amanda and I have struggled with, because I do that. We'll be fighting, we'll be arguing. And, you know, our big thing is like, okay, hey, even if we're fighting and arguing, we don't keep intimacy from each other. We're not going to keep sex from each other. I don't think that's a healthy thing to do. You know, just like, well, oh, we're fighting, I'm not going to have sex with you. Okay. That doesn't do anything good. And the problem though, is like, oh, all of a sudden now we have, you know, we're intimate, and it's like, oh, we're good. And then we just, I don't address the problems that we're having and don't work through it. And then we end up cycling back to it. So that's something I've been actually really needing to get more mindful with and intentional with on working through, for sure.
I'm curious, you mentioned like several times, you know, trust is built from good communication, that communication is at the core of good, wholesome relating together. What does good communication look like you from that leadership perspective? How would you frame that for guys listening in?
Yeah, it's actually pretty simple. It's that your team understands what you're trying to talk about, what you're trying to communicate. If your team doesn't understand, they can't go execute. That's like the real easy test is, you know, Mark, if you and I are talking through a plan, and I say, all right, Mark, I need you to go do A, B, and C. And you go out and you go do the job perfect, then our communication was efficient and effective. However, if I ask you to go do A, B, and C, and you go do A, D, and F, there's some problems. Well, who is the one briefing you with the plan? Me. Who is the one, you know, so this is all on me. I have to take ownership over our communication, and good communication is very easy to understand. It's when your team understands what you need them to do and can execute. And the reason why I want to make sure I add in the "and can execute" is because just because you say, hey, does anybody have any questions, or do you guys understand, does that make sense? And everyone's like, yeah, that makes sense. Yep. No, we understand. Nope. I don't have any questions. that doesn't mean that you had good communication, because if they can't go execute properly, it wasn't good communication. And there's a tool that we talk about at Echelon Front called the readback. And the readback, it's a very simple tool to have alignment between the two people or the individual who's talking to the whole group before, you know, so that they can go and execute. So before they like go off, you know, you do a little readback, and it's super simple. The only reason why people don't do this is their ego gets in the way, because they feel uncomfortable having their team brief the plan back to them. But if I take 3 minutes, if it took me 10 minutes to have you brief back to me how you're going to go execute the job, and that allows us to have alignment, and I can make corrections to what might have been, you know, heard wrong or written down wrong or perceived wrong. I don't know how, but something got twisted in translation because of my communication. If it takes me 10 minutes, but at the end of the 10 minutes, you and I are on the exact same page and you can go execute the work without having to call me, without asking for questions, without making a mistake. And then when things do change and happen and shift out there, you know what to do yourself. Is that worth it? 100%. Like all day long, it's worth it, because you're saving time and money on the back end from fixing things. So it's, you can do this with your kids, you can do this with your spouse, you should be doing it with your team that you work with. And you know, the readback is it's very simple. The biggest thing that you have to be aware of is make sure you are taking ownership when you're talking about it to your team. And I want to set you up for success. I want you to know that we're doing the readback. I don't want to wait until afterwards, you know, after our first meeting of me going, okay, hey, I learned this new tool. Cool. I'm going to do it after the meeting. You got to think about this. Every interaction with another human is either a deposit or a withdrawal, correct? Mm-hmm. Like every conversation, text message, email, it doesn't matter. Every interaction is a deposit or withdrawal. I want to be making deposits as much as I possibly can. And so if I wait until after the meeting and say, all right, hey guys, you know, I just want to make sure I articulated the message properly. I'm going to have a few of you guys come up front and brief it back to myself and the rest of the team to make sure we have alignment. I understand how you're going to go execute the plan. And I just want to make sure I have the resources to help you out. A lot of people will be like, all right, that's cool. Like you're getting alignment. But the thing you have to think about is, if I wait until the end to do that without telling them on the front end, what's the possibility some of those people were not paying attention, did not take notes, and are now going to be caught off guard and embarrassed and think that you are trying to make an example of them? Is there a likelihood that that might happen?
Yeah, in most rooms in the world. Because most people, by default, they're not taking ownership. It's leader at the front. You know, it's your job to get us home.
Yep, 100%. So that readback is going to be efficient, and you'll understand that there's some misalignment, but why wait until the end? I tell people all the time, like, hey, tell them on the front end to set them up for success. Now, is that a deposit or withdrawal when I tell you on the front end? That's a little deposit. It's better than the withdrawal from me, you know, from you possibly thinking that I was trying to make an example of you, or, you know, make sure, hey, everyone better be paying attention. JP's doing this new readback tool. No, I'm going to say, hey guys, you know what? I just learned this new tool to help our communication, to make sure that we have better alignment. And hey, from now on, at the end of every meeting, in every brief, every conversation, to be honest, it would be ideal. I'm going to have a few people brief it back to me. Or if it's just you and I one-on-one, I just, you know, at the end of that conversation, I want to make sure we have alignment. I would like you to brief back what you heard and what the key pieces were, so that I can make sure that I am articulating the message properly and communicating properly to you guys. I know we've had some misalignment that I have caused. I'm working on fixing it. So moving forward, this is what we're going to be doing. Hey, the meeting doesn't start for another 3 minutes, or if we need a little extra minute, that's fine. If you want to go grab something to take notes with, might be a good idea. And if you guys have any questions throughout the brief, feel free to raise your hand. Let me know. We can work through it. And then when we get done, if you have any questions, let me know. We can work through it before you brief it back. All right. So if I have that little conversation on the front end with you and your team, Mark, what's the likelihood your people are paying attention?
I mean, like you're going at 100% at that point. Like you don't want to let the team down. You're an intrinsic member of the team. You've been given, I suppose, what shows up for me is you've been given a starring role. I think what I hear you say is, you know, from a team perspective, but obviously in family, is like, you're that important to me. When I'm communicating with you, I want to know that you've understood, because alignment between us is really important to me. It's a deep value.
I want you to be successful. Like when you tell, you know, you're showing your team. Again, you're not telling them anymore, Mark. You're showing them, hey, I want to work on my communication. I want to make sure we have alignment. I'm improving this to help you be successful. Mm-hmm. Who doesn't want to work for a boss like that? You know, and it's the same thing in your marriage. It's the same, you know, and if you can find that alignment of like, okay, hey, what are we talking about? Hey, what are you hearing right now? What are you feeling right now? And actually having that back and forth conversation, it will help. And again, this is easier said than done. These are things that my wife and I struggle with, because emotions get involved and we are emotional people. And I'm an emotional person. I get passionate and emotional and I have a hard time detaching at times. These are things that we're constantly working on, but these are things that you can work on if you choose you want to. So the readback is a very powerful tool that helps with alignment.
That's an incredible tool. I'm thinking, like, backtracking myself for years, I can now know retrospectively, looking back, it's, you know, thousands of conversations where if my queen with me had the readback idea, it would have forced me out of my head, because thousands of conversations, like, she'd be there saying whatever. And like after one or two sentences, I'm there fucking like gossiping in my head. I'm already formulating some fucking egoic, small-minded response where I'm feeling disgruntled, or I've just checked out and I'm thinking like I haven't given it any importance. And I'm like, I'm giving it lip service, but my mind has gone to fucking game of five-a-side that evening. The conversation ends, and then I clearly don't do what I was meant to do with the girls or in town or at whatever errand, or I give some like, I'll be home at that time, but I don't realize it's important. And then everything falls apart. I mean, it's just that tool in itself, you know, it can help clean up and clear up, you know, 90% of all misunderstandings, which it renders them unnecessary.
Yep. Here's another one that helps that I've been trying to remind myself. And I've been working with people when I do, like, I also do like executive one-on-one coaching in addition to working with clients and their teams, is understanding. And I have to remind myself this all the time, but it works, is my perspective is flawed.
Mm.
So when you really think about that and you think, hey, my perspective is flawed, I don't have their perspective. I'm not in their position. I don't have all the information, the data to analyze their perspective and what they're thinking, what they're feeling. So it's not fair for me to judge because my perspective is flawed. And then also I have to ask yourself, especially with your wife, is what is their intent? What's their intent? Is their intent to ruin your day? Probably not. No, they might be mad at you, but I don't think Amanda's ever woken up and going, I want to make JP's day miserable. I don't think she has. I mean, maybe. I don't know, but I don't think she ever has. So if I just remind myself, like, hey, my perspective is flawed, what is their intent? It makes me really think, okay, cool. Well, their intent is to work through this problem, or their intent is to just get some space. Their intent is to, you know, it's, I don't think their intent ever is to make the argument worse. And if it is, well, then you got another set of problems. And then that tells you there's other things that you need to work on. But the majority of the time, the intent is not to make your day miserable. So it's just something that we have to be mindful of. Like, hey, your perspective is flawed. And then ask yourself, what do you think their intent is? And then go from there.
Yeah, that's so good. Again, it's just, it clears away so much of the fog of misunderstanding that haunts so many marriages. Mm-hmm. You know, like I know myself, every single time, probably bar none, that I get into a disgruntled conflict mode with Matilda, it's like, you know, whatever. It's just, I'm caught in that muddy situation. I can't see the clarity. The underlying assumption that's driving my nervous system at that point is going to be based on some judgment that her intent is just to fucking break my balls. You know, her intent is just, you know, like in conversation here, we laugh because it's so fucking clear. And again, it's like that, but like my perspective is flawed. If any time there's that loaded judgment, clearly the perspective is flawed. But I love what I'm hearing in your words there. It's like, it's in one question, you know, what's their intent? It just brings us back to that humility, you know, just as a ritual of asking a question, what's their intent? You're going to, every guy listening in is going to come to some clarity of, no matter what she's saying, she's not out to fuck up a situation. She's not out to make my day hell. She's not out. There is some intent there. It's so potent.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Here's the thing, though. If the rare percentage is that's where you're at, then it tells you what you need to know about the situation. And it's like, hey, we have some major things to work through. Like major things. Like to me, if I ever felt like Amanda was trying to sabotage my day or, you know, just really just mess with me, okay, we got some big problems. Now, are we arguing because of miscommunication and because I hurt her feelings? We can work through that. But if we're at the point where she's just like, hey, you know, wanting to sabotage, then okay. But I mean, to reiterate what you just said, like if we as men can just all ask ourselves that with our spouses, it'll eliminate a lot of like the BS judgments that we already have in our mind. It's like we go to war in our mind when we don't need to. You're just like, I mean, I don't know if you've ever done that, but I start making a situation worse than it is because, you know, something was said or whatever. And then I just start going like, it's like, man, I just go down this hole in this rabbit hole. And then all of a sudden at the end, like you're planning like a just like the worst case situation. Like, okay, where am I going to move out to? And this is what I'm going to, you know, you just all of a sudden you go and it's like, no, actually you just hurt their feelings earlier, you asshole, you know, like, and her feelings are hurt and you haven't been listening to her and talking to her. And, you know, it's just like, oh, okay. Again, what's her intent? My perspective is flawed. And then you kind of work from there.
Yeah. And I like it. One point for myself, I remember, you know, just having to start showing up as a husband. And I remember just doing some deep soul searching where I was like, Mark, do you want to live out your whole fucking existence with these little drama shit shows? You know, like, you know, claiming a victory inside my mind because I'm right and she's wrong. But like, all it is a dramatic shit show. It's like, you know, flinging shit to come out going, you know, well, you know, I'm just going to be pissed off for the whole evening, but I'm right. It's like, is that the peak of your victory as a man? Is that what you're settling for? And I remember just journaling going, no fucking way. I'm just like vomiting out some old patterns. It's like, cool, deal with them. But there's got to be a different way.
Yep.
JP, in the podcast, you spoke with Ryan on two topics that are, I suppose, near and dear to my own shadow journey. If you'd be willing to speak to them, I'm curious just how you overcame them as a man. It was the use of porn and alcohol. Both of those, I just lead forward with you in the deep, intimate surroundings here. Porn addiction for me was like 3 years, albeit not in marriage. It was like 3 years in university. Deeply marked myself as a man, and I've literally been overcoming it since in many ways. And back then, like alcohol dependency, like really overusing it. I come from Ireland. I mean, it's like just classic. We can put the Irish charm on it and say it's like, oh, it's part of our culture. But there's many, I've experienced the many ruinous effects of, just over leaning in too much on alcohol dependency. What was your experiences of both of these? And I'm curious more so, you know, what was your process of overcoming those effects within yourself to be able to show up more present?
Yeah. So the alcohol thing, it's never been a big problem, but it's, you know, it's something that's always like kind of come in waves, and like, I can just be like, cool, I'm not going to drink and I don't need to drink. And then there's times like, I'll just be like on benders and just be like drinking every night because for whatever reason, which that is a problem. So I understand that can be. And the reason why I'm saying it's never been a big problem is because it's never been something that I couldn't stop. It's never been something where I was just like, I have to drink. I can at least be aware enough to say, hey, you know what? Man, I've been drinking too much. You know, and just be like, hey, I'm gonna throw all the back. Or if Amanda will make a comment like, hey, I drank a lot last night. Is everything okay? And she'll do it the right way. She won't come at me hard and like attack me and put me in a defensive mode. She legitimately is like, hey, is everything okay? Like, are you not sleeping good? Like, you know, are you stressed out? And she's, her intent, I know, is because she cares. And I'll be like, no, everything's fine. She goes, okay, I'm just curious. And she won't say anything else. And it allows me to like look at the mirror and be like, what are you doing? Why? And then I'll just throttle back. And I mean, the nice thing about working for Echelon Front is we don't really drink, you know, we don't drink at all with clients. We don't drink at all as a company together. It's not like, you know, so, you know, and I'm on the road a lot. So that makes it pretty simple. Like, hey, we don't drink on the road. We don't drink with clients. And with my op tempo of being gone and traveling, it just means that I don't drink a lot now, you know, but you know, when I was in the SEAL teams, there was a time that I was heavy in the bottle. I was drinking a bottle of Jameson every single night and mixing painkillers. Wow. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was just trying to numb just all the pain from losing Mikey and Mark and the guys that got wounded and me not being overseas anymore. I mean, I didn't really know how to deal. I didn't know how to deal with it. And, you know, unfortunately, the thing about our community and the SEAL teams is like, we drink a lot. We work hard and we party hard. Like, that's like literally what you're told as a new guy. Hey guys, we work hard and we party hard. And guys are like, cool. Awesome. You know, I just, you know, crazy, you know, just crazy. Like, you know, which is, I'm not talking down on it. I'm not talking down on the SEAL teams. I'm just saying that was just the way we did stuff. And that's kind of all I knew. And, you know, I would, you know, just, you know, turn to Jameson and ginger ale. And I would just drink that all night long. And then I would wake up and go to work the next day. And then on the way leaving base, pick up a bottle of Jameson, get home. I'd go work out. And then, but with dinner, I'm drinking Jameson and ginger ale. And then I'm sitting on the couch and drinking Jameson and ginger ale until I fall asleep. And I'd finish a bottle and wake up, and then I would just, and so that was a problem for sure. And I remember Jocko even mentioned something because he knew something was off. He didn't know what was off, and he knew that something was off. And, you know, that was a very powerful conversation because, you know, he pulled me in his office. He's like, hey man, is everything good? I'm like, yeah. He goes, is everything good? I'm like, yeah. He's like, hey, it's Jocko. I'm like, and I just broke down, you know, and I was just like upset about all these things, boom, 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 like listing off all these things. I didn't even tell him I was drinking, you know, but he could just tell something was off because you're not going to be 100% when you're drinking that much. I don't care who you are. You might. Yeah. So here's the deal. I was performing at a high level, but it wasn't what I was capable of. And he knew that. He knew that because that's what a good leader does. They know their team. And, you know, that's what a good husband should be able to do is know what their wife is capable of. And if something's off, it's time for you to go help them, to help them heal, to comfort them, to nurture them, to love them. And, you know, that's what Jocko was doing for me as a great leader. And, you know, one of the things he said, he's like, hey, I would love for you to be overseas right now with your sniper rifle. There's nothing more than I would love than that. But that's not your job right now. That's not your mission. Your mission is to be the best damn instructor, preparing our guys for war, so that we don't ever have to put on our dress blue uniform again and go to another funeral. And for me, like, ooh, like that was just a slap across the face of like, hey man, get your stuff together. And I remember, like, after that conversation, I believe it was after that conversation. I know I've done this a few times, but I'm pretty positive after that conversation, I stopped drinking completely. Like completely. I was like, cool, I'm not going to drink. And I went 6 months without one drop of alcohol. And because I told myself, I'm not going to drink for 6 months. And I didn't. I mean, I went to Vegas a few times with friends, like didn't have one drink of alcohol, you know, it was just, you know, all right, cool, no big deal. And, you know, and I was really focusing on just trying to be a good instructor and be better at my job and, you know, whatever. So the drinking thing can definitely be a problem for men. Was it a problem for me at times? Yes. Overall, is this a huge problem? No, because it doesn't control me. I don't, yeah. It hasn't, like, I could have a drink or I could not have a drink. It doesn't matter to me. Now I like having a glass of wine with my wife and relaxing, but there's even times like right now we're doing the def reset for Echelon Front. It's like, you know, the discipline equals freedom reset. Even though it doesn't say no alcohol on there, like it's a violation of one of them, either the diet or the sugar-coated lies, or maybe both, right? Mm-hmm. And so one, I just don't want to screw that up. But two, I was like, I'm just not going to drink. It's not a big deal. I don't have to drink. Now, here's the deal. There are guys. My brother was one of these guys. And I'll tell you the whole story. And then we'll switch over the porn thing. But, you know, my brother Corey had a problem. And I say had because he reached out to me. He knew that I went to that men's event in February and completely transformed things for myself spiritually with my relationship with God. Had a legitimate interaction with God at this event, which was incredible, very powerful. Was able to find things in my life that I needed to work through, like stuff that I had buried that I was like, oh, if you don't work on that and fix it and get rid of it, it's always going to be there. That's going to be baggage that you're carrying along. And so it was really cool to be able to go to this event. It's through my buddy's ministry, Walking in Truth. And the event is called Pursuit, and Men's Pursuit. And then they have the Women's Pursuit, but it's awesome. So I went to the one in February, and then, you know, God made it very, very clear to me, like, hey, you're going to be involved in a ministry. And I was like, okay, which ministry? And their Walking in Truth ministry was one of the ones that I was going to be involved in to help. And I was like, okay, cool. And so they asked me to come back and be a leader in September. It was incredible. My brother, I had invited to come to it, and he was getting like ready for it. It's about 3 weeks away. Yeah, about 3.5 weeks. And he goes, hey, because there's like this 30-day prep that you start, like, just, which isn't a big deal. Like, you could do it if you want. You don't have to do it. It's it's your pursuit, right? Whatever you want to get out of it. And my brother was like, you know, hey, I want to be intentional. I really want to get the most out of this. And then he reached out to myself and my best friend, Steven. And he was like, hey, I need some help. I was like, okay, what's up? And it was crazy because that day, earlier that day, I was leaving jiu-jitsu with Steven. And I said, hey, man, I really feel like the Holy Spirit's putting this on my heart. I think my brother coming to Pursuit, the issue is going to be him being sober that weekend. I don't know if he can do that. Like, I just don't know if he can do that weekend. And Steven's like, okay, well, let's think through that. He's like, maybe there's, you know, he's just trying to think, like, he's like, all right. He's like, well, let's pray on that and lean into it. And, you know, and then that night, my brother sends that text message to us. He goes, hey, I need help. I need to get sober. I want to get the most out of this prep. I need help. I want to get sober, but I can't do it without medical help. I've been drinking every day for the last 10 years.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, Okay. Now I had an idea and I knew Corey had drank a lot, but man, I didn't realize it was at that level. And so I was like, okay. So I reach out to my brother is a Navy vet as well. And so I reach out to Mama Lee with America's Mighty Warriors. And I said, hey, do you have any rehab facilities that we can get my brother into? This is what's going on. Got him into a really good one out on the East Coast. Yeah, in Maryland, close to my sister where she lives. So it was like perfect. She's a surgeon and she could be close to him. And it was a complete God thing. It was incredible. It's like, yep, we can get him here. Here's the location. I was like, okay, talk to the guy, talk to my brother. We worked through some stuff. Flew my brother-in-law out to Utah. Him and Corey drive from Utah out to the. I mean, it was like all these things were great. I was working in FTX that week right along their route. I can't even make this up. Like literally the freeway they're driving, this is where we're working. So I got to see him. I hadn't seen him in months, you know, and like it was really cool. So he goes and gets sober and you know, now he's 4.5 months completely clean and sober. And it's just wait, no. Is it 3 months or 4 months? 3 or 4 months. I have to look at the dates. But it's incredible and it's because he reached out for help and he made a commitment. You know, so there's all the tools and resources out there. You want to quit drinking? You can quit drinking. Do you want to quit drinking? That's the thing. You can quit watching porn. Do you want to quit watching porn?
And like
You can
you can just add in whatever
everything.
you want. You know, like, do you want your marriage to work? And of course, forget about like assuming that your wife is in it with you,
But still.
do you want it to make it work? Do you want to stop arguing? If you want, you're gonna find that way.
Oh, guess what an argument has to have? Two people. You want to stop arguing with your wife? Then shut up. Stop talking. Stop responding. Stop making digs. Like just apologize and say, you know, I'm sorry. You're right. Hey, you know what? You're right. You're right. That's something I need to work on. Even if it's like something you don't think you need to work on. I promise you, if it's an issue with her, it's something you need to work on. Like there has to be alignment. And I'm not just saying roll over and take the beatings from your wife. No, I'm saying like you want to stop arguing, then stop arguing. Just stop engaging. And so, like,
There's just so much in that, and there's so much in just that one snippet. It's like if every husband listening in just took that bit, you know, just the receiving feedback. Because I've noticed it twice. You mentioned earlier on in the, and it was almost like a throwaway point. It just happened so easily, you know, that Amanda gave you feedback on the amount of drink. You know, she give you feedback. Hey, are you okay? And then she'd, you know, she'd step off. But what I was noticing in that is like she's stepping off because you're receiving feedback. You know, a woman, and I think this is where I got into so much trouble. I know coaching guys in relationship and some super high-end performers, like we take feedback from our CEO, we take feedback from, you know, it's like the commander in the Navy SEALs. But then we get like a 5-year-old in front of some mundane black and white feedback from our wives, because like we're 5 minutes late. It's like that counts. We didn't, you know, we left the seat up off the toilet, and it's like just so much. It's like that's not a fucking issue, is it? Like in my mind, it's that simple. It just is that simple. Like what you're saying, just take the fucking feedback, say sorry, get on with your day.
And here's the deal. It's like the reason why we want to keep arguing, or the reason why we allow these things to be an issue, is because of our ego. Like if you just detach from your ego and we just try to remove your ego from the situation, then it doesn't matter. It should it if your ego's not involved, it does not matter for you to say, hey, you know what? You're right. We're 5 minutes late and it's my fault. Like, think about that. If you say you're right, we are 5 minutes late and it's 100% my fault. I'm sorry. What else are they going to say? You've just completely disarmed them by taking ownership. The fight's done. Okay, maybe they try, like, yeah, I know. That's why I'm bringing it up. And you're like, I know. I'm really sorry. Hey, you know what? Next time, I'm actually going to set some alarms to keep me on pace for getting ready so that I don't run late again. I'm really sorry that I caused us to be late. This is 100% my fault.
And like in that, it's not even that. I think the hilarious thing I have found, which has been an absolute fucking revelation, my thing was always like, oh, my woman will be pissed off. There was almost this thing of admitting I was wrong. You know, she's gonna pounce on me. She's gonna like make shit out of me because, you know, I'm wrong. I learned that shit from my dad. And but it's like it's the polar opposite. You become the most attractive man in their fucking room. Because why? How many guys has your wife, if she goes back into like ex-boyfriends, you know, whatever, how many men have women met that just make it that simple? Oh, feedback. Thank you. That's really valuable. I love receiving
And
that feedback.
yeah, and so all their girlfriends that they're talking to, like whenever they have arguments, you know, they're all talking about it, and whatever, that's fine. We do it as men. It's like, man, dude, I'm a little frustrated with my wife. And you know, women, like, think about this, like, how many of your wife's friends are saying, oh man, dude, it's so annoying. My husband takes ownership every time. We don't argue because he's, you know, like, it ain't happening. And so if you can be that one in the group where your wife's like, yeah, hey, you know, we get in little fights, but to be honest, like every time, like Mark completely takes ownership of the situation and he's been working on his communication and things have actually been good. All those wives are gonna be like, what? What?
Get
Like,
out of this group,
yeah. Hey, we
bitch.
want hate here. You know, it's just like, but just like that's the way you can make a change. Like that's a real thing. You can make a change, and it's goes back to what we were talking about, Mark. Do you really want to? And you know, my brother Corey, that I just love and respect, he wanted to make that change, and he committed to it. He got the help. He humbled himself. He was obedient to God. And even though he could have, there's multiple times he's like, hey, I just gotta move back to Utah. I need work. And I'm like, bro, Amanda and I can take care of some of your bills for a while. You need to be healthy. You need to be sober. You even said, I can't go back there because if I do, I'm gonna get sucked into all the old ways. And I was like, hey, just go to pursuit. And after pursuit is something like we'll find you something, right? And so he wasn't able to go to the one in September because he was in the rehab. And then he then went to an extended program. And then he's been staying with my sister and brother. And then he went out to Utah and moved everything from his apartment into storage. And then he went out to Nevada where he has some property and he did a 7-day fast. No food, no social media, no communicating, nothing. It was a 7-day fast from food, communication, social media, electronics, everything. And that was on him because he just wanted to completely reset his mind, which I thought was powerful that he did that. Again, commitment, right? He's like, no, I'm not going back down the same way. And it's still a struggle. Does he have temptations? Yeah, absolutely. He just doesn't open the door. He doesn't allow that to come in. And here's the deal. Will he one day? Maybe. Has he? I don't know. If he has, cool. You know what? He shut it and he went back to being sober again. So, okay, cool. If you make a mistake, close it, boom, move on. Don't dwell there. And again, it comes back to that commitment. Hey, you're going to fall off the path. Get back on. You know, just get back on and then try to stay on as long as you can. But understand that as a human, you're going to vary off the path. Get yourself back on. But as we mature as husbands and as humans, we can stop ourselves from going off the path when we recognize that we're drifting towards the edge. That's what we need to be mindful of. It's like, hey, what's the temptations? What's the problems? What causes me to start doing this that I need to bring it right back down center? And for me, that's, you know, for me, going to pursuit is what allowed me to close all those doors, get rid of stuff. I definitely have not been drinking as much as I was before pursuit because there was a little time that I was going hard. And again, it was like one of those things, Amanda and I had a lot of friction. There's just a lot of, you know, just a lot of crap between us. And I was able to work through that at pursuit. And, you know, like, you know, most men, you know, was just porn was a thing. And, you know, to the point where it was like, it wasn't even something I felt guilty about because I didn't think about it as a, like a negative thing. It was, but it slowly crept in. And that's the thing, man. That's what's dangerous about porn is it slowly creeps in. And, you know, what you're watching starts becoming a little more intense. And, you know, and then it just, it literally damages your brain. There's scientific studies that show like it damages your brain. And for me, it was starting to make like reality not seem something that was truthful. Right? It just makes all these things like just not a reality. And that's not healthy, because now you're basing, you know, your marriage and your intimacy and sex based off of something that is not real life. It's a movie. You know what I mean? It is a movie. And it's something that people are performing and doing, whether it's like, you know, the homemade, you know, videos that they're still performing a video to upload, knowing what they're doing, yeah. Or if it's the big production one with whatever. And, you know, it was one of those things that I never really, man, to be honest, like I just, because it slowly crept in and I allowed that complacency, it just became one of those things where it's like, all right, cool. Like, you know, to the point where it was really toxic for a marriage, because like, hey, if I thought it, here's what's crazy. It's like, even if I thought Amanda wasn't going to want to be intimate, I'd go watch porn and then I get in bed and just be done and just not even try to be intimate. How do you think that made her feel? She knew what I was doing. She knew. And there's times where when we were fighting, man, like I would use that against her. I'd be like, well, I'll just go watch porn. Like, it's not a big deal. Like, you want to act like this? And like, dude, who says that? Like a piece of shit says that, man. And I was just, you know, just in that bad spot. And, you know, when I went to pursue, when I realized just the doors that you're opening by watching porn to spiritual warfare, like that's a real thing. Whether you want to believe it or not, spiritual warfare is a very real thing. And, you know, you open up a lot of doors.
What are you referring to specifically? I think I intuitively get what you're meaning by spiritual warfare, but what are you referring to?
You know, I mean, it says in the Bible, you know, the battles that we fight are not of flesh and blood, but of the spiritual realm. And it's like against demonic spirits and different spirits and demons. And you open up those doors, man. I mean, you do, you know, you open up those doors when you're doing drugs, when you're partying, when you're, you know, when I mean, there's just so many things that you can open up those doors to, you know, watching different things, listening to different things. And porn is, man, there's a lot of bad doors that you can open up. And
yeah, well, I get that, because I know the sacred relevance from Tantra teachings. You know, when you go into Tantra teachings, making love, your higher self, it goes back to old warrior traditions where warriors would not make love, 7 days, 14 days before going into battle. Why? Because they have that virile sexual force available to you to be more present, to be more conscious, to be more switched on, to have your full inner physiology working for you, not just depleting. You know, like we get into this pattern of depleting. So I absolutely, I do get that.
That's
perspective.
Interesting. I don't know about that. I'd have to I can't have an opinion because I don't know anything. All right. Of really what you're talking about, but that is an interesting thought. And I know that I understand the concept behind it. Now, to me, that would make sense if you're having sex outside of marriage, you know, and you're just having sex for sex reasons. But when you're, you know, when you're in a marriage and you're, you know, you have unity under God, like that sex is actually very powerful. It's actually, it's very healthy. It's powerful. And so it's the opposite of watching porn, right? Porn is just not even close. I mean, we're talking polar opposites, brother. And so for me, after pursuit, I mean, just closed those doors and understood the damage that it was causing. And I didn't want to go to that again. And dude, I mean, that's been since February and not once have I watched it. I haven't even like started to. Now, has temptation crept in? Yeah, you get a thought and then I'm like, nope, we're done. And I rebuke that thought and I'm just like, no, I'm not going to go down that route. And for me, it's just been not an issue. Now, I know other guys, they've struggled with some stuff. since their pursuits, and you know, but it's a constant thing that we're working on. And for me, it was just a commitment thing. With again, it comes down to commitment, man.
This word commitment. It's like
discipline. It's about discipline, and you know, one of the things that you know I talk about a lot is this quote called "Discipline is rooted in the truth that we tell ourselves." You know, this is something that Jocko told me January of 2020. We were in Half Moon Bay at an event with one of our clients, and you know, him and I were talking offline about some stuff. I was just frustrated with my health and just, you know, some others, just in general, I was frustrated. And he goes, you know, JP, he listened to everything I had to talk about. And like a good leader is just listening and he's processing and he's asking little questions and, you know, to kind of pull the thread to get some more information. And at the end, he goes, you know, JP, discipline is rooted in the truth that we tell ourselves.
Can you take me deeper with that, JP?
Yeah, for sure. And that's what I kind of sat there and I processed it. And I was like, can you say that one more time? And I wrote it down in the notes of my phone. And I said, well, what do you mean by that? He goes, nobody really likes being fat, but they convince themselves, hey, it's not a big deal. It's okay that I'm overweight right now. But nobody actually goes, I'm actually happy that I'm overweight. I'm happy that I can't play with my kids. I'm happy that I'm actually unhealthy. Nobody, but we justify it. And I had justified my health getting out of whack, not as a priority, because I had told myself I'm super busy. I'm traveling all the time. I told myself all these things that were lies. Could I have eaten better while traveling all the time? Absolutely. Could I have been more disciplined and gotten some workouts in every single day? Yep. 100%. And it's just like, it comes back to discipline. And if you're disciplined enough and you're honest with yourself and then you make a commitment, boom, stand by, because things will change in your life. And it just comes down to the lies that we tell ourselves. If you're lacking discipline in any area of your life, it's because you've been lying to yourself.
I'm smiling to myself because literally coming into this year is the last year I have been bullshitting myself completely with the lie. And the central lie is I don't have time for working out. You know,
I have something good for you.
Go for it.
You're not allowed to say, I don't have time anymore. If you can honestly tell yourself, Mark, it's not a priority to work out and be fine with that, then it is the truth. But that's not always going to be the truth. And let's be real. If you reprioritize some stuff in your life, you could make it a priority. If it's important, you will get it done.
Yeah.
That's the truth to it.
I'm waking up. Like I'm waking up. It was like New Year's in with my men's group there this morning, speaking to it, calling my own bullshit. It's like I've actually camped out there for 2 years. There was the whole lockdown thing. I know you've mentioned Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I fucking love Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Like went insane at it for 2 years. Different things. Lockdown. We live quite rural, local club. Closed, so it becomes quite prohibitive.
You gotta have some of that. You gotta have some of that speakeasy jujitsu, the underground jujitsu.
So it's like since then, which is like there again, there was fucking it in live in vitro in this interview. It's like I was bullshitting myself again because I said, "Oh, I've been lying for the last year. I've been lying for 2 years." You know, I really liked jujitsu. I had training before. I did soccer and football, you know, pre-marriage days and that. But I've been living in just bullshit and lying to myself. It's like, oh, I don't really have time, and you know, I'll have to make time, and business, you know, needs to go a bit better, and I need to hit those objectives, and then I'll have more time and space. Blah blah blah. It's fucking bullshit.
How much better would your business be if you were training every day?
Absolutely. It's on that there's an old quote of Richard Branson. And I still remember it, but I just like dusted it off, like took it out of like the library in my mind. But it went, he was asked by some guy, is like, Richard, how do you reach such insane levels of productivity? It's like, that's easy. I work out 2 hours every day.
Oh,
and
that's
it,
good.
It's counterintuitive, but it's like,
look
it's
at
only,
what Jocko does.
It's counterintuitive to a mediocre mind.
To a mediocre mind. That's what I love. You're right. But you can shift from that mediocre mind to that great mind, to that excellent mind, to that high level, you know, I mean, look what Jocko does every morning. What does he do? He wakes up early and he works out no matter what. It's what he does. Look at the success that guy has. It's insane. And I know more than most of the people. I get to see behind the curtain because I know all the other stuff he has going on that nobody knows about. And then I'm like, bro, how the are you doing all this stuff? Excuse me, my language. But, you know, I'm just like, but here's the deal. Boom, boom, boom. So that's my commitment that, you know, to myself is here is, hey, at least a few times a week, I will be up early working out. And, you know, there are times where just for me, my sleep schedule, travel, everything, like I just got to get it later in the day or whatever. You know, and here's the other thing, like I'm also, man, my sleep has always been weird. And I've talked to Jocko about this and he's like, bro, he's like, dude, sometimes you're up until 2, 3 in the morning. Like you ain't waking up at 4:35 after that. I'm like, I know I did for a while and I tried and I just crashed and burned. It wasn't a good thing. But like last night, got in bed, tossed and turned, didn't have really good sleep, but I got enough to where when the alarm went off at 5, I was like, okay, right, let's do this. I actually was looking at my watch at 4:50 and I'm like, oh, it's so annoying. My alarm hasn't gone off yet. But I was like, cool, I'm up. And, you know, trying to, you know, part of the def reset is up before the enemy. So you wake up earlier than you normally would. And, you know, I normally don't wake up before 6:30 when I'm home. I don't need to, you know, I just, that's about the time we wake up. And so trying to get up around 5:15, 5:30 so I can go do something. But this morning I went and did jujitsu and it was legit. I did. It was like just over an hour and I burned over 700 calories. Like it was incredible. Great training, hard training. And I felt so good. And when I left there and I was driving back home, I felt good, you know, and I just know today's going to be a great day. And it's, yeah, going back to what you're saying, it's like, hey, we got to make that commitment to ourselves and stop lying to ourselves.
Yeah. And I love that. It's just discipline is freedom. That from the book. And just like I mean, it has become a mantra of mine. But it's just, it's the reminder of it. And I think it's like at that core part of, you know, the struggle being a husband, and it can feel like quite the struggle, and it can, you know, the perception can be that it's a struggle. Yet, you know, listening to what you're saying, you know, that level of commitment, it's, if it is a struggle, well, you've set the system up for it to be a struggle. Because if you just lock in, I think every single guy, no more than myself, and it's like, I really want to, I don't want to say like, oh, every single guy going in, it's like myself for 2 years, bullshitting myself. But, you know, the invitation, the guys listening into this story, I always try and invite guys in. So it's not like just a passive listening. But, you know, just as we're talking here, you know, what's your bullshit excuse? What is your thing that, you know, your diet, you know, losing a bit of weight, you know, like what JP is saying. What's that, you know, your version of me not exercising, denying my nervous system, my body exercise, that is preventing you from showing up at, you know, in your best available role as a husband, as a man, as a dad, as a human being? You know, you're not forgetting about denying, you know, the beauty of those roles and how your family can engage with you, but you're denying yourself a beautiful human experience. What does that look like for you?
Yeah. Two weeks ago, I mean, my wife and I got into a just real bad fight, like real bad fight to where I was just like, you know, I'm done. Like, I'm just done. Like, this is, like, it was at that level, you know, where you're just like, it's been brewing over a couple of weeks. And then all of a sudden it came to it, you know, and, you know, I was just like, I got it. And I knew, but here's the deal. I knew what I needed to go do. I needed to go work out. I needed to get out of the house. I need to go do something. And so I packed a gym bag and I packed a bag for the trails. And I went and I did a little trail walk, jog, run, like where I did some intervals on a trail. And I did that for a little over an hour. And then I, you know, by the time I got done with it, it was night. It was nighttime. It was dark. So it was awesome. Like I'm doing a trail run, you know, just in the dark. And I'm like, yeah, it's like that primal feeling, man. It was awesome. And, you know, I get back to the truck and I'm just like, all right. I was like, I feel better. And I was like, all right, I still need to go work out and go do something else. And so I, you know, changed the backseat of my truck real quick. And, you know, just to get the, like the muddy clothes off. Actually, there's nobody there. I changed in the parking lot. And then when I got there, I changed the backseat of my truck. When I was literally pitch black. I'm like, whatever. Changed out my shorts and my shoes. And I went to the gym and sat in the sauna for 15 minutes, just stretching and just focusing on just thinking, right? And then went and did about another 45 minutes of work on the weights, did some intervals, did some heavy bag work. You know, it's nice hitting that heavy bag, man. And then did some sprint intervals on an arc trainer. And, you know, so it was about another hour of training. And, you know, went and grabbed some healthy food from the grocery store to snack on the drive home. So I did not go through the drive through at a fast food place like I wanted to, you know, just boom. And, you know, when I got home, man, I mean, was I still mad? Yeah. Was I even close to where I was at? No. Things were like, in my mind, I had already shifted like the cortisol, like all, like just, I mean, it's science. You work out, you're going to feel better, right? The chemicals and everything that happens to your body, like to where, like, even when I got home, I was like, okay, like, I don't want conflict. I don't want to fight. Damn it, she's really good looking. You know, just like all those things, you know, you're just like, all right, whatever. And so it was, for me, you know, being active also allows me to be a better husband, you know, because I feel better. And when I feel better, I treat people better and I communicate better. And that's my goal. My intent is not to be a bad husband. My intent is not to fight. My intent is not to be a disconnected father. Like, I don't want to do any of those things. But when I'm not working out and I'm not making my health a priority, I do those things.
It's the simplicity of just doing whatever is necessary to bring in a state change. I know that was a game changer when I became conscious of it. I think for years I could look back and go, yeah, fuck, when I walked a dog or when I went for a jog, I felt better. But I never made the, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. And I'm, and it equals 2 every single time. And I find, like, listening in to you, what I love in just the whole thread of the conversation is just the simplicity of it. You know, it does get simple. You know, continuing on when you're in that point, I think I imagine I'll feel more human if every guy listening in knows what that point. I know what that point is, where it's just like you're in the red of rage, you're in the red of total pissed off frustration. Your mind is just not giving you anything that's connecting. In that moment, it's just, yeah. It's like, fuck me. Well, why am I doing this? Like, again, how are we back here? But it's just
detachment is a superpower.
Yeah.
Detachment is a superpower. And that physical activity allows you to detach from those emotions, and those things. And that's why I love jujitsu. I mean, bro, you can't think about anything else when you're doing jujitsu. You have to be present.
Yeah.
You have to be listening. And man, I'll tell you what, like I get done with some hard jujitsu, I'm good. Like I, you know, my mind's much better. I'm able to think and process things. And yeah, I always feel better.
One thing that I have found about jujitsu training, I definitely had no outlet for anger and aggression. And it's like, you know, in family life, dealing with two kids, unschooling, business, you name it. Like, I mean, it's not unique. Yeah. Every single guy listening in has his version. But I just loved this capacity to hit the mats and let that aggression that was building up during the days, like frustrations and potential arguments and, you know, the girls should have had that done. And here we are going out and the house is fucking mess. We're going off to training and blah, 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 blah. And then, boom, you know, just... I consciously, I picked the biggest I had this thing, and we were attending quite a small club, but I had this practice where the guy I'm most naturally afraid of, go to him, just go to him first. And that for me, I don't know, just facing that level of fear and letting aggression out, that for me was like the most therapeutic thing in my life. I know your career had obvious, you know, allowing of aggression, of that expression. I was I was like a classic fucking Mr. Nice Guy. I mean, nice to everybody's face. But getting, I think it was like really was deeply healing for me, because it laid the foundations for my marriage to turn around. Because Matilda with me was deeply, deeply unsafe. Because I was nice, and then I fucking explode. Because I always thought aggression was bad. Aggression is wrong. Anger is wrong. But jiu-jitsu was very healing. It was like, no, it's not wrong. It's a natural primal force and energy. And I've just got to learn to let my nervous system get through it. And when I got more comfortable there, I can feel intense anger now with Matilda most times if I've got all my practices in a row. But I can feel intense anger, and she can feel safe, which for me was like a revelation. I never knew that growing up. I never had that model for me. But jiu-jitsu definitely added that to my life.
That's awesome. Yeah, and understanding the difference between those two categories that you don't want to be living in. One that you want to be able to control, one that, you know, when you can't control, that's a bad thing. And the fact that you're able to identify that is great, and, you know, take control of that that's huge, man.
JP, I'm in one of these zones where with you, with the conversation, I just fucking keep going. I'd stop looking at the clock and keep going. It's been that type of conversation. It's such a beautiful unfolding of wisdom. What I've been deeply moved in your presence. You know, it's like for me listening in, I don't know about other guys listening in, but I've been so deeply impressed by Navy SEAL training, by the philosophy, by the approach obviously put forward in Extreme Ownership. But I've just been so deeply moved by your vulnerability and your openness and just this radical honesty. There's just this no bullshit part of you that is just such a, it's that word trust, you know, you spoke to it so much. There's such a sense of trust. So that's been deeply inspirational. Thanks for showing up like that.
I appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity. And yeah, I mean, I agree. That conversation went by real quick.
Yeah.
That's good.
Where can the guys listening in, obviously, you know, the guys listening in, the context we're talking about, you know, showing up powerfully in leadership as husbands and that, where can guys find you for more of that corporate training work, et cetera? And I know you do one-on-one coaching. If any of the guys are interested in it, where can they track you down, JP?
Yeah, I mean, I run everything through Echelon Front. So if you follow us on social media, Echelon Front is the Instagram page. Our website is echelonfront.com. So that's echelonfront.com. Echelonfront.com is our website. Social media on Instagram, I'm at JP Donnell. LinkedIn, I believe, is Jeremiah Donnell. And Twitter is at JP Donnell as well. So I try to interact as much as I can on Instagram. It's been probably the biggest platform that's helped, you know, with growth for just awareness with what we're doing at Echelon Front. But yeah, I mean, if anybody has questions about what we do at Echelon Front or why we do what we do or what instructors we have or how, you know, different workshops, keynotes, coaching, you know, if you just go to echelonfront.com, we'll get you taken care of. I just appreciate this opportunity once again.
Thanks for that, JP. And guys listening in, as I say, follow up with JP, an amazing resource himself, but the company at Echelon Front, what they're doing. And my own personal recommendation is just Extreme Ownership. Just stick it on the checklist for the next book that's coming your way. Immensely life transforming information there. JP, thanks for tuning in. Every man listening in, amazing husbands around the planet. I mean, there's such magic and such gold in everything that JP was speaking to there today. You know, when you're listening to it, my challenge, my invitation is just find one or two key parts that just struck home for you and implement. Just don't get up off the passive seat. Yes, it's super interesting, but find those nuggets that you're going to implement. And as JP said, with 100% commitment, anything is possible. With deep bows, big love, go have an amazing kingly day. Hey guys, before you shoot off, would you like to eliminate the risk of divorce, or even worse than that, living together unhappily ever after? Do you like the sound of becoming the marriage transforming force in your relationship? Well then, if so, the new Be the Husband She Brags About Marriage Transformation Program could be perfect for you and your family. Within this, you learn to master the Be the Husband She Brags About Marriage Mastery System with high flame coaching from me and high accountability from other marriage transforming heroes just like you. The whole program is based on three simple steps. Number one, hack out what is not working in your marriage. Number two, implement a proven system that is perfectly proven in the arena of marriage to work. Number three, quite simply, live out your have it all happily ever after marriage. To implement now, sign up to the email list at kingsoffreedom.me. The link is in all the podcast episode descriptions. And for that simple email sign up, you will also get the free ebook, 15 Simple Habits to Be the Husband She Brags About.